And joining us today is Ion Desher. Ion is an author. He is the It's interesting, the books that he's written are Star Wars mashups. And if you wonder what is a mashup, it's not food. It's not something that you get at a restaurant, but it's something that authors have done in the past and something that Ion has done. And you got the idea, Ion, from a conference you attended, if I'm correct. And first of all, welcome to the show and thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Now, as I mentioned, you were at a conference and you, read or heard about the Pride and Prejudice mashup. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's close. So I read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and then right after that went to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with my family, and had recently watched the Star Wars trilogy before that. So I sort of had Star Wars and Shakespeare and mashups all bouncing around in my head, and thought, wouldn't it be fun to take the original Star Wars movie and rewrite it as though it were a play by Shakespeare.
Now, what about Shakespeare? I mean, a lot of people have heard of Shakespeare, but some of them find it hard to read. But if they take any type of English class or literature class, they're going to be exposed to William Shakespeare. How familiar were you with William Shakespeare?
Shakespeare has been a passion of mine really since my freshman year of high school, so that's now 23 years ago. When we started reading Shakespeare in high school, I already had a theater background, so here was a play that we were getting to read in English class, and, when we had to memorize a speech, I was the nerd who would raise my hand to volunteer to recite the speech first, and it was also the same era that Kenneth Branagh was coming out with, like, his Much Ado About Nothing movie, and so it was a really good time to be a kid getting into Shakespeare, and have just loved Shakespeare ever since. I've seen a lot of stage productions, a lot of movies, and that sort of thing. So I just really enjoyed Shakespeare. I was lucky in that because not every kid sort of captures a Shakespeare passion the way I did.
And a lot of kids are familiar, too, with Star Wars and, of course, Jedi Masters, Jedi's Return of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker. But this is an interesting combination here that you're doing, though. Star Wars and Shakespeare, people are going, wait a minute, that's just not good.
I took two very popular things and thought, I think these would work together because Star Wars is this sort of sweeping epic story, but very similar to the kinds of stories that Shakespeare would have written. He did write big sweeping epics, especially with the history plays, some of them. The characters that you find in Star Wars in many ways are very similar to the characters that you find in Shakespeare in terms of the sort of types of characters they are and their motivations for things. It's all just about good storytelling. And so there was something to me that said these are going to work out well together. In trying it out, I found that Star Wars really does lend itself pretty naturally to a Shakespearean treatment.
Hi, Ion. This is Norma Martinez. I'm co-hosting the show with Louis Sines, and I wanted to congratulate you for putting two things together that I was not particularly fond of, Shakespeare and The Phantom Menace, because the book we're talking about today is William Shakespeare's The Phantom of Menace, and it's Star Wars Part the First. And if anybody knows the Star Wars saga, they know what I call the first movies, which weren't really the first movies sequentially, were Star Wars A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. And then, a couple of decades later, George Lucas comes back and gave us The Phantom Menace, which so many Star Wars fans were anticipating with so much glee. And then the movie, including myself, I was a huge Star Wars fan, and then The Phantom Menace came out. And the effects were astounding, but the acting and the story were so disappointing. And I was also not a big fan of William Shakespeare. I, unlike you, just can't get through a Shakespeare play. But the fact that you put William Shakespeare and The Phantom Menace together and you encapsulated it so well, I have to congratulate you for making me see The Phantom Menace in a much better light than I had in the last several years.
Well, thank you so much. That was one of the big... I enjoyed the prequels when I saw them, but was never a huge fan of them. And so I wondered how it was going to be to sit down and spend so much time with them. And I actually found myself enjoying it more than I thought I was going to and was able to, make some changes throughout the book that hopefully, you know, for people who didn't enjoy the movie, hopefully gives them something to reconsider.
And I think it's really terrific because, for me, the character who really grated on me the most was not Jar Jar Binks, the controversial character that most people really disliked from the movie, but it was actually Jake Lloyd's take on Anakin Skywalker. I was about ready to scream if he said "we" one more time in the movie. I was ready to just pull out my hair. But you painted him in such a better light. It was kind of hard for me to get the actor Jake Lloyd out of my head, and I'm sure he's a fine young man now, but when I saw the movie, it was really, really quite obnoxious, and I'm really glad that I was able to approach that character in a different way. And the character that I'm also talking about, Jar Jar Binks, the one that many people found so controversial because of the language that was used in trying to create his Gungan manner of speech, which was, I believe, taken from the Gullah language of Louisiana. But Jar Jar is presented here in the book not as a dimwit as he's presented in the movie, but he's actually a really smart character who was actually kicked out by his own people. He learned the manners and the ways of human speech, but yet he still feels like he has to present himself as a dimwit to the characters around him. But when you read his asides in your version of William Shakespeare's The Phantom of Menace, he really is, you know, sort of taking charge of everything around him. He's very observant, and he's sort of, you know, turning the gears and trying to make things happen that are going to prove the success of the rebels who are fighting the Trade Federation.
Yeah, and both Anakin and Jar Jar were instances where I knew that I needed to do something that was a little bit different for those characters. Jar Jar especially, you know, as you said, I think he's the one who most people, you know, just found him to be not a very, you know, kind of a despicable character because he is such a dimwit and potentially even an offensive character. Mm-hmm. And so I really did want to turn him around. I think he, of any of the characters that I've worked with in these books, he's the one who I really changed the most from how he is in the film, because as you said, he very much has this hidden agenda that he's working out of bringing the Gungans and the Naboo together and unifying those two people who had been sort of separated by prejudice and fear. But he's doing it all, you know, by acting like a dimwit, you know, and sort of playing into the way that humans expect Gungans to act. So I did want to do something special there, again, to get people to reconsider his character. And Anakin, too, you know, I mean, one of the first, it may even be Anakin's very first line in the prequels is, you know, Jake Lloyd looking at Padme and saying, "Are you an angel?" You know, and I think we all kind of groan a little bit inwardly.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, that's a little too, you know, a little too sweet, a little too whatever. So I honestly, when I was writing these books, I was picturing Anakin probably a good 3 or 4 years older than what he is in the movie, because I thought, you know, in order to make this, I mean, I'm going to give him Shakespearean speech, but in order to make it believable, I need to think of him as somebody who's at least slightly more mature than the little boy in the movie, right? So he does end up with, you know, instead of saying, "Are you an angel?" he gives Padme this speech about, you know, pilots who have talked of you know, celestial beings, and so hopefully we're finding out there's kind of more behind the question than just, you know, "Are you an angel?"
And I also was reading some of the notes that you have in the back of the book and the challenges in writing this book in iambic pentameter, and yet you actually have changed a bit of that for certain characters. I guess if somebody's really into sort of the poetics of Shakespeare and how his work is structured, they'll probably notice a few differences within each of the characters.
Yeah, so with Jar Jar, when he is acting like a dimwit, which is a great word for it, when he's acting like a dimwit to other humans, or to humans, instead of speaking in iambic pentameter, which is this rhythm of speech that includes 10 syllables per line, each of his lines is only 9 syllables. So I made him one syllable short, and the sort of joke that I make in the afterword is it's like he's one sandwich short of a picnic, right? So So he sort of misses in that way. Yoda was another character who, when I did the original trilogy, I knew I needed to do something special with Yoda's speech because he has such distinctive speech in the movies. And so I made the decision to put his lines in haiku. So each one of his lines is a haiku instead of being iambic pentameter. So definitely a departure from Shakespeare, who would have never known about that Japanese form of poetry. but something that I thought was, you know, a good way to present Yoda and make him, you know, he already has this sort of sensei-like character to him, and so it made some sense to do that.
And it also seems like Yoda's manner of speech and the way he sort of constructs his sentences is almost Shakespearean in the way that it's not your typical North American sentence. It's sort of almost backwards, you know.
Right, exactly.
Sense the force in you, I do, you know, that kind of a thing. It seems very Shakespearean.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you sort of get inverted word order when you put things into iambic pentameter so that you can keep with the rhythm of the speech. And that was very much like Yoda already.
And another one who I think seems already sort of very Shakespearean, and I think it might just because of his manner of speech, is, I'm thinking of the movie more than I am of the book, is the actor who played the Emperor, Senator Palpatine, Darth Sidious, in this series of movies. He seems like he's just sort of, you know, dripping with that English evil that you would normally find in that kind of a character.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, he's very much in all of the movies that he's in, you know, is almost kind of like an Iago and Othello, who's just so evil.
Yeah.
You know, but at least in the prequels, he's presenting this pleasant face to everyone around him, you know, and so nobody suspects that he's evil until it's too late, until everything's already gone wrong. So yeah, absolutely. And Ian McDiarmid does such a great job playing him and giving him that sort of wonderfully cold quality.
And also going back, I was going to make this relation. Jar Jar Binks, when he's presented in this book, during his asides, he, you know, is speaking this, you know, he's speaking in a very intelligent manner, but just to us, the readers, or to the audience, if this were presented as a stage play. And then you actually include his speech as it would normally appear in the movie, if he was actually speaking Gungan. And the same with R2-D2. There's a few lines that R2-D2 has that are asides that sort of translate exactly what those meet, meet, moops are all about.
Yeah, and that was, you know, the decision with R2 I made when I did the original trilogy. And so I did have some question about, you know, with Jar Jar, can I sort of use that shtick again, you know, and have Jar Jar essentially doing the same thing that R2 is doing, you know, speaking one way to humans and speaking another way when he's just talking to the audience. With Jar Jar, though, I think I went the extra level of really changing his character as a whole. You know, R2-D2, you sort of assume that he's noble and snarky just sort of by virtue of how he is in the movies. With Jar Jar, I think I've changed him sort of more fundamentally.
We're speaking with Ian Desher. He is the author of the latest book in the Star Wars trilogy, Shakespeare trilogy. And you're going, what the heck is Shakespeare trilogy? What Ian has done is he's taken actually the three of the Star Wars movies and written into the latest one is The Phantom of Menace. And it's written as some of the critics have said that you did a very good job of, as far, what do you call it? I mean, for purists who are complaining about or don't want to even look at it because they say, oh, no, I'm not even going to look at that or read it because I don't want to be contaminated and I want to stay the way it is. Kind of the way I felt about Abraham Lincoln, vampire killer or slayer. So
right, right.
When you approached, and you got this idea and you approached Lucasfilms about this, what was their reaction?
You know, Lucasfilm's reaction initially was when I wrote the first sort of chunk of the first book, I actually stayed closer to the original movie in terms of not playing with the characters too much, not inserting too much of my own interpretation of the dialogue and that sort of thing. And they were actually the ones who came back and said, well, we like where this is going so far, but we want to see if he can have more fun with it. We want to see if he can play around and make it his own. And that was when I actually went back and revised the first couple of scenes and introduced the idea of R2-D2 speaking in English. And that was, you know, one of the things that then sold them on the idea that, okay, yes, this will work. And so they were, and they've been super supportive since then. It's been really fun working with Lucasfilm, and getting to, know them and learn about sort of how they, do the process of these books.
Why do you think mashups have caught on and are, especially with young adults and young people? And as I mentioned earlier, some of the purists want to kind of stay away from them, and we kind of want to give them like that commercials to say, get Mikey to try it. You'll like it. And then once they start reading, like this critic in this review said, once I started reading, I couldn't put it down.
You know, I think mashups capture our imagination because a good mashup puts two things side by side that you would never think to put side by side, right? Pride and Prejudice, this wonderful romantic story by Jane Austen, and zombies, you know, just about the dirtiest, grossest thing you can think of. Similarly with Abraham Lincoln and vampires, right? It's a very similar mashup. Star Wars and Shakespeare, you know, these two seemingly very different worlds combining. I think the way to win over the purists, as you say, is by doing justice, really doing justice to both sides of the mashup. You know, I have seen, and we probably all have read, some sort of like Shakespearean parodies that really are not very well done. They're just sort of trying to, you know, put S on the end of words and things like that, you know, to try to make yourself sound Shakespearean without really knowing some of the rules behind what Shakespeare did and the way he used his language. And I'm certainly not saying I'm perfect, you know, and would never claim to have the genius that Shakespeare had. But I did. It was a very intentional choice for me to be really careful with my Shakespearean parody and to really learn more about his vocabulary and about the rules of Elizabethan grammar, so that people on the Shakespeare side could respect it more and could say, okay, this is well done. This is not just, you know, sort of a throwaway parody of Shakespeare. And on the other side, also, the Star Wars purist, you know, making sure that there's enough there that Star Wars fans feel like, wow, this is really a new take on these beloved stories. It's not just sort of rehashing what's already been done.
Well, I'm looking forward to your take on Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, because I sort of lost interest in those movies. I didn't even go see them in the theater. I had gone to see The Phantom Menace when it came out on the day it was released, and after that initial disappointment, I just sort of waited until several years later until somebody lent me the DVDs, and then I saw them. But you sort of won me over with this Shakespearean take on it. And one thing that I really like is the fact, again, it's not a very large book. It's only just a little over 100 pages long, and I think I read through this maybe in about an hour and a half, and it's a really terrific encapsulation of the movie. It hits all the spots in the movie, and the one part that I really enjoyed was your take on the pod racing scene, which is, you know, a huge part of the Phantom Menace movies. A lot of effects, a lot of really fast moving cars or pods, but you can't really translate that into print. But you managed to do that by sort of capturing the speed of the pods in the race to the dialogue in the film. It's almost like it's going back and forth very quickly from character to character, who are almost doing a running commentary on what's going on in the race.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of challenges there. I mean, there's the one challenge of, you know, this is a written document. It's a book, you know, not a movie. So you can't see the action that's going on. And second of all, there's the issue of, you know, Shakespeare in his day wouldn't have had, you know, the effects to do something like the pod race. So, and yet it is, as you said, this really major piece of the Phantom Menace. And so I sort of, you know, thought back to Shakespeare and you know, how would Shakespeare handle a big sort of action sequence like that? And one of the things that occurred to me was, you know, he so often, especially in big battle scenes, he'll have, you know, messengers just swooping in and out, you know, reporting on various parts of the battle and what's going on, which sort of gives it this energetic feel, even though essentially all you're really seeing is people, you know, talking to each other on the stage. And so that's sort of what I did with the pod race, where you have the commentator, that two-headed creature, you know, talking about what's going on with the race. But you also have Jar Jar Binks and Padme running in and out as the race is going on, you know, talking about what's happened, and they're sort of breathless with excitement about the dangers that have, the bad things that have happened, the good things that have happened, and so that hopefully there is at least some of the same excitement that you feel in the movie, but done in a way that could actually be staged.
Who did the illustrations for your book? They're really terrific.
The illustrations are done by a man named Nicolas Delort. He's a Canadian who lives in France, and my publisher found him. He does these wonderful woodcut-style illustrations that look like they could be in a book from hundreds of years ago, and yet what he's doing is taking, you know, Star Wars characters and putting Elizabethan costumes on them and helping us imagine what the costumes would look like if they were done on stage, helping us imagine what a stage production might look like. You know, he puts the pod races, race vehicles on strings, almost like they're giant marionettes and that sort of thing. So sort of helps you imagine what this production could look like.
I had to laugh out loud when I opened the book and, you know, you see Act One and then you see the character Watto there. He's kind of this elephant seal looking character with duck feet and little tiny little wings. And I think he's Anakin's master, if people remember him in the movie. And he has sort of this really sort of blatty kind of voice. And he just sort of appears not quite angelic, just showing up in between acts. It's a really great illustration.
Yeah, and that's one of those fun things that the you know, that Nicolas did with the illustrations. You know, Watto in the illustration has this little vest and this little hat, you know, that make him, this sort of puts a lovely little touch on him.
Speaking with Ian Desher, and he is the author of a Shakespearean Star Wars trilogy. The latest book is The Phantom of the Menace. Ian, you talked about, you know, a lot of people who think about Shakespeare and know about Shakespeare, they don't want to really read it because they said, well, I had to do that in high school English class and I never got into it because of the these, the thous and all that. And the same way, I guess, for reading the King James Bible, which is, you know, thou, thee, begat, all that stuff. And people want it put in another language. And so when you're combining Star Wars and Shakespeare and with today's technology, that a lot of people are looking now at Kindle devices or audiobooks. How does this translate into audio?
Audiobooks were put together for the first three books, and they just did a wonderful job. Although I did not write these with the thought that they would be performed, they do lend themselves well to performance. And so the audiobooks, you know, combine the music from the trilogy, the original John Williams score, with, you know, actors reading out the different parts and doing great voices and all sorts of sound effects and things. They really did a wonderful job with audiobooks. And so I think it translates really well. They're fun to listen to. You really, I think, do get a sense of sort of the production of it as you read the audiobook.
I think you have a really long project ahead of you if you're going to continue along this line, because you still have, you know, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and then, you know, J.J. Abrams is coming out with his final three chapters, or at least we think they're the final three chapters of the Star Wars saga. Are you sort of in line to go ahead and put a Shakespearean take on those as well?
Honestly, at this point, I don't know. It sort of is being talked about, but I don't know. I think there's some question about how many Shakespearean Star Wars adaptations the world needs, but it certainly would be fun to do Episode 7 and beyond.
Now, when you're talking, and people look at this as Star Wars and Shakespeare, again, kind of an odd combination, but we do that all the time at home with experimenting with our foods and different things, especially as a kid. But some people, when they think of Shakespeare, they think automatically of to be or not to be. And thinking of Star Wars, I think automatically the answer to that would be not to be C-3PO. And people are wondering, what? What did you just say? When you're writing mashups and when you're writing a touching something as some people might call sacred, Shakespeare. Do you have to be careful as an author as far as what kind of mashup will work? It seems like most of these have been based on classic works.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are certain mashups that wouldn't work. I mean, I think so some of the keys to writing mashups are, first of all, that both sides of the mashup have to be fairly popular things. And one side of the mashup needs to be something that's modern and touches pop culture. So vampires, zombies, Star Wars, right? And so I think if you lose one of those two elements, you know, it may not work so well. And also, you know, I also think it just has to be part of whoever's writing it or making it. I think it has to be something that where they're sort of interested in both sides equally. I mean, somebody once told me I should do William Shakespeare's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be great fun, but I haven't watched Buffy at all, so I don't know Buffy, and so therefore I don't think I could do it justice. You know, so I think it has to sort of fall within somebody's passions also.
Star Trek.
I've certainly thought about doing Shakespearean Star Trek adaptation.
Ian, thank you very much for being with us here. We've been visiting with Ian Desher. He is the author of the William Shakespeare's Star Wars series. He's loved Shakespeare since eighth grade. He was born, actually, 45 days after the Star Wars episode. Is it five?
Six? It would have been episode four, The New four. Hope.
Okay. And he has a BA in music from Yale University, a Master of Divinity from Yale Divinity School, and a PhD in ethics from Union Theological Seminary. Thank you very much, Ian, for being with us here today.
Thank you.